officially the vacation cheer. It's like absolutely the vacation cheer over here. But for everybody wanted an out, a shout out over here. You got your shout out. Let's go. Let's start off with this parsha. Vahaya Akiv Tishmun. The Akiv is an interesting parsha. It is the Musar parsha of 2008. The absolute Musar parsha. It is all Musar. Vahaya Akiv Tishmun. So I'm going to translate it the way our scroll translates it. Vahaya Akiv Tishmun. When you will listen, because you listen, Esamishbatim Aile, to these laws, Ushmartim Vasism Osam, you keep them and you do them. So God will keep the bris that He made with your parents. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you everything you could want. If you listen, He'll listen. That's the idea behind it. Now, it connects back to over here. Now, listen to this board over here. This is strong. The Chassam Sofer says that we know we're not supposed to do mitzvahs for reward. That's not why we do mitzvahs, right? We don't do mitzvahs in order to get rewarded. It's just, okay, we know there's going to be a reward, but we don't do it in order to get rewarded. We're not supposed to do it. The purpose behind doing mitzvahs is to be davuk to Hashem, to be stuck to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring in the Baal HaTanya. The Baal HaTanya says that the Torah is a...
That is a reward, though.
That the Torah is a representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. God's thought, after going through all the olamos and being brought into our world, into our physical world, God's thought was minimized into the Torah. How you do that is sort of like, it's sort of, yeah, you got to say that there's some huge piece of garbage. I don't want to say it's garbage, but like I'm thinking of a garbage truck that takes like a massive piece of garbage and then condenses it into like one little thing, condenses it. There's tons of stuff in that one little thing, billions upon billions of boards in that tiny little thing. But it's all there. All right, so what kind of a mushel is that?
It's garbage.
But to think about it, it's like, take a donut and crush it, like a beautiful donut, and crush it into one little thing and then swallow it. I do it with my kids all the time.
It's
bread, by the way. Very good. My kids will never eat challah, as is. If they take a piece of challah, they won't eat it. I roll it up into a tiny little ball and I give it to them, and I say, like, oh, look at this, just this.
Yeah.
But it's a tiny little ball. And they'll eat the entire thing. They're like, oh, it's unbelievable. So they'll be able to eat it because it's so small. That's the idea. So what we're doing when we're learning Torah is we're really bringing about the thought of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu inside us. We're bringing God to us and surrounding ourselves with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's like all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming to us through these thoughts of Torah, in essence. That's really what's happening. So that's why Olam Hazeh, this world doing mitzvos, is greater than Olam Haba. Because, says the Baal HaTanya, doing mitzvos in this world makes you HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes inside your head. His thoughts become your thoughts. And it goes and surrounds you as well. That's what happens with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in Olam Haba, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is over here, so to speak, and you're over here and you're basking in His glory. You're getting the Ziva Shechina, the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's shining on you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not part of you. You're a little bit away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, basking in His glory. But in this world, you can become HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can become Hashem Himself. That's the idea of why Olam Hazeh is greater than Olam Haba. So we got to understand, so how do you get davuk in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do you get stuck with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in you?
You resemble.
That resemble like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How? Because of this concept called mitzvah goreres mitzvah. One mitzvah causes another mitzvah to happen. Meaning, if you bring yourself up to a level where you do a mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will automatically put you on a higher level to let you do another mitzvah. And then you'll be able to do another mitzvah, and you'll do another one and another one. Chas v'shalom on the other side, it goes the opposite way as well. Zelu mazel solokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made each one connect the other. If you do an Avera, it'll lead to another Avera, and another Avera, and another Avera. But one mitzvah can lead to other mitzvah. So that's the concept of what it says over here. At the end of Va'eschonin, it ends off the parsha. We always know there's a connection between the psukim from one parsha to the next. You'll keep the mitzvah v'esachukim v'esmishpatu v'esharanukim mitzavacha yom la'asosim. You'll keep the mitzvah and the laws and the other laws that I command you to do today. And then when you listen to these laws, ushmartem v'asisim osam, you'll do them again. You'll do them again. Because mitzvah, go wherever it's mitzvah. If you do it once, you're going to do it again. You're going to have another chance to be able to do it, says the Chassam Sofer. And that's the idea behind it. And that's the pshat. That's the pshat behind when we have, what's it called? When we have our whole concept of v'haya ekev tishma'un. V'haya is always used
negative.
As a lashon of? No, the opposite. Vayehi
is negative.
V'haya is positive. Is positive. It's always simcha. V'haya kisav ol ha'aretz. When you come into the land, it's going to be happy times. But kisetze la malchama, when you go out to war, there's no v'haya. It's always happy when you have the word v'chaya. So what's the happiness over here? The happiness is there's a simcha that you're going to get beyond the regular schar that you get, the eikev schar, the heel rewards that you get. Like the garbage rewards?
As a result of you walk?
The garbage stuff, yeah. It's like the stuff on the bottom, the stuff that's the heel, it's all the way in the bottom. V'chaya means you're going to get ultimate schar. I didn't. No, if you'd like to come, you'd have to fill out the form in the back.
You want me to give this year?
You know what?
You want to take
please, please. It's on my website. Go for it. Anyway, so that v'chaya is the simcha. That's the simcha that we get by being dovuk in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by going out and doing these mitzvahs and causing other mitzvahs to happen, and thus I become stuck to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. That's where the simcha comes into play. And if you're stuck to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you become so holy that you're like one with God, what happens to you? You daven and everything's answered. Akev stands for Aninu Biyom Koreinu. He will answer us at the day when we call out. Right, it's Abak, actually. Abak. Ayin Beis Kuf. But the idea is, Aninu Biyom Koreinu, that when we call out, God will answer us. That's the idea. If you do these mitzvahs, you keep growing up because you are. You're within a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea behind it. Okay, famous line over here. This is from the Ben Ish Chai. It says over here in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ki Somer Bovavcha, maybe you'll say in your heart, Rabi Ma Goyim Ha'Eila Mimeni. There's so many other Goyim. They're too much for me. Eicho Chalo Risham. How am I going to be able to drive out all the nations out of Eretz Yisrael, out of Eretz Canaan? There's no way I'm going to be able to get rid of those seven nations. How am I going to be able to do it? So the Ben Ish Chai says, this pasuk refers to a question that have been, I guess this question has been asked to Jews many times. It appears three times in the Gemara. The question is, you go with the rove. Acharei Rabin Lintos. Acharei Rov Lintos. You always go after the majority. By Sanhedrin, if they judge, you have to go with innocence, let's say. There are 35 people that say he's innocent, 34 people that say that he's guilty. So you go with 35
unless,
to say
it's only
innocent.
In a suffix. Only you know for sure.
Only in innocence. And yeah, obviously then nobody would say guilty. But you would always go with the innocence over guilty because you go with the rove. If you have a halacha, you count up poskim. It's really unbelievable. The Mishnah Berurah does this sometimes. He'll count up the poskim. For example, whether or not streets nowadays are considered Rishus HaRabim, the Chavetz Chaim in the Bir Halacha goes through and counts them all up. He counts up, here are the shitos that say that we have Rishus HaRabim nowadays. Here are the shitos that say that we don't have a Rishus HaRabim nowadays. Well, we have more that say there's Rosh Hashanah, therefore we pass on like Rosh Hashanah. He counts them up. He counts up all the people, and we go after the row. We go after the majority of people. So if you go after the majority, there are 6 billion people in the world, possibly more. By the last count, 1999, I believe, was the last census. They counted 6 billion people. Out of the 6 billion, you have about 0.01% that are Jewish. Out of that 0.01% that are Jewish, you're dealing with maybe, I don't know, 2 million people that are from, and even that I think is a kind of a skewered number. People that believe in God. So if so many other people believe in other things, you have 1 billion people that believe in Avodah Zarah. 1 billion people, I mean real Avodah Zarah in India and China and all those places. You have 1 billion people that believe in Christianity. You have a couple hundred million people that believe in Islam. So go with the rove.
There's more
go with the
Islam
rove.
Than Christian.
No, Christian claims to have 1 billion people. And Islamic people probably has more, but I remember they're counting 600 million. The claim of Christianity is to have 1 billion. And Avodah Zarah, I mean, we're talking almost all of India.
You said from, and I understand that Christians, Muslims, whatever, can't be considered from, so to speak, but you also then follow that by saying believe in God.
Right. I should have said believe in God. Let's go with believe in God. Actually believe in God.
Right.
So, I mean, a Christian can just believe in God and that's it for his religion, you know? As a Jew, you have to do a little bit more in order to believe in God. You know, believing in God usually is not enough to be able to consider, like, I believe in God, but I don't want to do any of the mitzvahs. So that guy's considered a kofar by Judaism, or an apikoros. So that guy wouldn't necessarily consider. But regardless, the idea is the same. Why not go after the rove? Go after the rove. The rove is going against you. The rove is Christianity, or the rove is Islam, or the rove is something else. So why don't you go after the rove? So Rabbi Ochanan Wasserman, I'm sorry?
By money, you
don't go after rove. By money, you don't go after rove. Because that's a Gemara in Chav Zayin Amud Beis and Bava Kamma, I believe. That we don't go after the rove. That's a very good call. But why does this have to do with money? What does that have to do with money? Regarding religion. Yeah, regarding religion. Like, what do you do? But what you're saying is good because of this answer. Rabbi Chana Wasserman is the famous answer. It's an unbelievable. They're very good. It's the first
piece of Rabbi Chana.
wanted.
Cool.
I wasn't listening to you, and there's a reason. Either way, Rebbe Chanan goes out, and he says an unbelievable line, an absolutely unbelievable line. He says that you only go after a rove if the people that are arguing against you make sense. If they don't make any sense, if what they're doing is something stupid and inane, it doesn't make any sense, there's nothing behind them, they don't go after the rove because they're nothing. They're bribed, he said, by their taivas. They're bribed by their desires, by the things that they do, and he doesn't want, if the guy doesn't want to believe in religion, that's not something you have to go after. That's not a rove that you have to follow. That's something that's just okay, these guys are idiots. So therefore, there's no rove to go after in the first place. That's all Rebbe Chanan goes with. He says that, but the Ben Ish Chai says a beautiful word. He says, there's a whole Shev Shmaitz about this. Rove versus Karov. Karov means close by. If you have the majority of the world, but you have a city that's very close, you can assume it came from that city that's close instead of the rove of the world. But there's a billion people in China. Yeah, but the city that was right there, the murdered victim was probably from that city. So it's rove versus Karov. Karov wins. The Karov always wins. The one that's closer wins. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is within us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is close to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the connection, the bris with us, and he brought us at Har Sinai and said, I'm close with you guys. So even though the rove of the world is against it, we're karov with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And karov always beats the rove, so therefore we go with the karov. So he says, that's the pshat over here in the psukim. Says the Ben Ish Chai, Kisom Vavavcha, Rabim HaGoyim Ha'ilim Yimeni, Echal Ochal Orisham. There's so many goyim. How can I go against that rove? What am I going to do to go against that rove? Don't worry. Zachor Tizkor Asher. Remember what God did for you and everything that He did. And then he goes on and says, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is within you, He's karov to you. See, even though you got a rove, the karov beats the rove. The one that's close beats the rove. Okay, that was a stomp. Then the pasuk goes on and it says the following. In Perakhes, pasuk Beis, it says, Vizachartis kol yedera. And this doesn't strike you as strange. When you read this in the parsha, if this doesn't strike you as strange, you're a tzaddik. You're a good Jew. But this is a very strange pasuk. Vizachartis kol yedera sholicha Hashem alakecha. You'll remember the road that God took you on. Zerubbabel shana for 40 years by Midbar in the desert. Laman anoscha. He took you in the desert to afflict you.
Yeah, that is weird.
To afflict you. To test you. To know what was in your heart. Are you going to keep his mitzvos or not? Thank you very much. I don't want to be tested. Did every single one of these Jews choose to be tested? They said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to be tested. Give me a lot of problems. Give me a lot of issues. I want to have as many issues as you can give me. Give them all to me. I'm going to pass every single one of those tests. David HaMelech had to ask for a test from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David HaMelech told, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, listen, I'm going to tell you what the test is and you're going to fail it. It's going to be an Arias and you're still going to fail it. But other people don't know. Do we have these tests? I guess this could answer. If we can answer this, then we can answer, why do bad things happen to good people? Why do bad things happen? Because God is testing you. I remember this. Rabbi Slipkin in his book throws out an answer as to how old the world is, 5,768 years old. He said he heard an answer that the world is really older than that, but God created it as if it was in the middle of everything. He created it 5,768 years ago with the world having a history that never happened. For example, if you would cut down a tree on the first day of creation, would it have rings? First day of creation, it would have rings, right? But it was one day old. If Adam Rishon would have died on the first day and he was buried, and you would have dug him up, you would have looked at him. Would you say this is a one-day-old baby? No, he looked like he was 20. He looked like he was 30. He looked a little bit older than that. So basically, God created the world with a history that never happened. So he said he doesn't like that answer. Why? Because then why is there dinosaur bones? So he said he heard the answer that it's to give people the same answer, right? Because it had a history that didn't. So he said, but he heard an answer that it was in order to test people so that they, if they would realize, if the trees all had rings that went back 5,768 years, if they all went back to there, then people would realize, oh, there must be a God. Because everybody would realize, hey, it must have been created 5,768 years ago. Hold on a second, but they would have realized that it would be 5,768 years ago. So therefore, he had to give you a choice, and therefore he gave you something in order to test you to see if you're going to go with him or if you're going to go with the idea of Big Bang Theory or anything like that. And he said, that's what Rabbi Slifkin said, quoting somebody. And he said, I don't like that answer because I don't believe God is ready to test you. He's got a pasuk against him. It's a pasuk that says God wants to test you. Now, I don't know if you can exactly string this in and like put it in and say, oh, here's pshat. You know, I don't know if you can actually do that. But the fact is, by the way, if you look up Guinness Book of World Records, the oldest tree in the world, it's no older than 3,800 years. Last time I checked it out, maybe they found a different one and it's different. But the oldest tree in the world is 3,800 years old. Living tree. The oldest living tree. And they haven't found anything that's older. No. I'm sorry. It's the oldest tree, period, that they found. The oldest tree that they found is that old. In theory, you could find a tree that was already cut down many years ago, and it could be from much, much older. But they haven't found anything like that. They think that this is the oldest tree in the world. That's how they worded it. I don't know if that's the exact thing, but I'm not usually medallic at a Guinness Book of World Records, so I don't know. That's exactly it.
What was the oldest fossil in the Guinness Book?
The oldest fossil. That I don't know. Right. Yeah, that already. I don't know if that's in there.
Didn't they say before the model that
David one book would
be together?
Yeah. But that's not, you know, whatever. There's other things. Okay. There's other things. Regardless. So what's the point? What's the point of the testing? Okay. I'm trying to remember how we did this. All right. Let's try to understand it like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created anything in between Egypt and Israel. God knew that the Jews were going to travel from Egypt to Israel. He knew that was going to happen, right? Before he created the world, he knew that was going to happen. So why didn't he make, like, oases? Like, huge oases. He did make one. It was an Elim. But why not make, like a nice land in between Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael? You had to make it a desert? Over anything else, you had to make it a desert? You had to make it a disgusting land where there were scorpions and snakes and all these problems? Why? What's the point of making it barren? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created it, and he knew that the Jews were going to go through there. He could have created it well, so why in the world did he make it in such a bad way? So he says, the Malbim gives two answers. This all together is going to be, it's a long board, but regardless, I'm going to shorten it. The two words are like this.
Give us better genes.
To knock down our physicality and to bring up our spirituality. Let's try to understand that for a second. The Jews had to learn how to the concept of Mesiras Nefesh, of giving up their souls for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Baal HaTanya also says, every Jew has it ingrained within them to be Mesiras Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu had a spiritual gene. There's a genetic code that leads you to want to give up your life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what happened in the Holocaust. That thousands upon thousands of Jews, hundreds of, even millions of Jews, were willing to give themselves up and not kill themselves. They were willing to put themselves in the hands of the enemy and be killed by the enemy rather than give over their faith, rather than do anything else. We've had millions of people over the years that have been able to do that. It's an unbelievable thing. Jewish people are willing to do anything but renounce their faith. To be Mosar Nefesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to bring out that from within them. And the way to do that after being on the 49th level of Tuma was to bring them into a land where they're going to be able to knock down their physicality and bring up their spirituality. Now remember, the point of the world is not to be entirely spiritual, to be a malach. Because otherwise he wouldn't have brought them to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was a land of pure physicality, where the grapes were huge, where all the fruit was huge. That wouldn't be a place to bring Eretz Yisrael. If you wanted to bring up only spiritual people, leave them in the desert. Keep them in clouds. You don't have to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. Why bother bringing them to Eretz Yisrael? It must be that the point is to live a physical life, but to know how to use the physical in the spiritual. To know how to make a bracha beforehand. The only way to do that is to make them have that test ingrained within them during those 40 years in the desert, that while you're there, learn how to live off nothing. Learn how to live off literally nothing in the world. So that you don't have any physicality. There's nothing that you want in this world that you can have. And become more spiritual. And to that extent, he gave them the man. The man was a tremendous thing. The man, according to the Meshech Chachma, gave them seichel. It made them think clearly. The problem with us is that we don't think clearly enough. Aside from the fact that we watch all these movies and TV shows and stuff on the computer that we shouldn't see, and that ruins our mind and is not able to let us think as clearly as we want to, but we also eat foods that ruin us. This stuff is not only garbage, it kills you. It literally kills you. You can't think straight when you have sugar in your system. You can't think straight. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm gonna live a sugar-free life. I can't do it. Because unfortunately, I am not that type of a person. But the fact is, Kadosh Baruch Hu told us, Chol of Yisrael is supposed to be, take away the timtum alev, the problems that you have inside your heart. That if you keep yasham, you're supposed to have all these problems go away from you. All these things that you had, all these problems that you have, that I can't think straight. It's because you're eating all the most terrible things in the world. So the point of living with the mun was to make them think clearly, so they could look at something and say, oh, I understand it. And what are they doing in the Midbar for 40 years? They learned Torah. That's all they did. There wasn't like a couple years of them like sitting around like making huts. They made their huts on one day. They made like put up a pole. They put down like a whole tent thing, and they were done. They didn't really have any real huts. They didn't do anything. All they did was learn Torah all day long. If you learn Torah all day long, you gotta have the mind to do that. You can't be bored. Can you imagine? After like an hour of the first day, like everybody's taking a bathroom break. Everybody's like going out for that drink of water. You know, everybody's like going out to see if they can get a Coke from the machine. Like everybody, I just can't take it anymore. They have to have a benazman and benazdoran. They have to have all these things. These people learned for 40 years straight without breaks. They didn't even go to the bathroom. Mun did not allow you to go to the bathroom. There was no bathroom breaks. There was no excuse to leave shir. And they weren't bored because the mun made them want to learn. It made them spiritual enough to want to learn. That's the pshat behind why they got the mun. It's interesting, by the way. Where were they zocher the mun? So the pasuk says, at the end of that pasuk, right over there, it says, Leman and Uskal and Asusul Adas the Shobo Vavcha, Vayanchon, and he afflicted you, Vayarivech, and he starved you. Do you hear this? He starved you. Vayachilcha as a mun, Ashaloya Data Velo Yaduna Vosecha, he fed you the mun that you didn't know, and your fathers didn't know. What do you mean your fathers didn't know? That means because Avram Avinu. What happened to Avram Avinu? The Jews all knew the story of the others. They all knew what happened with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And they knew. Lech lecha me'artzecha. Leave your land and go where? Go where was Avram supposed to go? To Eretz Yisrael, right? Very similar to the Jews. Leave Mitzrayim, full of all good things, and go to Eretz Yisrael. Avram was to leave his land and to go to Eretz Yisrael. What happened to Avram when he went to Eretz Yisrael? There was a huge famine. And he had to leave and go down to Mitzrayim. Why didn't he get the money? Shouldn't he have gotten some food? Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't give him anything. So why didn't he get the food? The Jews knew that. They knew that Asher Lo Yadu Navosef, our fathers never had anything in the Midbar, and they were still willing to go into the desert. They weren't expecting anything. They were expecting to starve. They knew they were going to starve. But they knew this is what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. We're willing to go ahead and do it. That's an unbelievable concept, that they were willing to do it even though they knew that Avram Avinu never had such food, and he wasn't going to get some food. Why didn't Avram get that food? Because you have to pass the test in order to get the money. Avram Avinu never had the test in order to pass it. After he left and he went to Eretz Mitzrayim, then he came back and already, then Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, you pass the test, I'll give you regular food. But the Jews weren't in a place of regular food, so they passed the test by leaving, even though they knew that they weren't going to get anything. Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, now you deserve to be like Malachim, and he gave him the man. It's a tremendous concept.
40 days.
40 days, what do you mean, for the man?
No, they only had intention to go 40 days.
For 40 days? No, technically only 3 days. You're right, the original. But they didn't complain after that. Eventually they complained about the water, but they didn't complain about the food. They were okay with the food, even though they had only brought out, you know, bread from Mitzrayim, the matzah that they had on their shoulders, and that's it. They didn't bring out anything else. Okay, right over here, the pasuk ches. This is a strange pasuk also. Did you know, by the way, Rishon is the largest Rishon. This is the Monday and Thursday where it just takes absolutely forever, especially if you have one of those slow balkores. You gotta go to an early meeting. It's just the longest kriya ever. The longest kriya ever. So either way, Eretz Chita, you should know, by the way, I lane for the 7:15 minion, and I forgot on Monday that I was laning. So I lane there every week. I don't know how I forgot. But regardless, I got there on Monday, and I'm like, alright, I'll just go over it during Chazaras HaShatz. I went through like 3 psukim. There was no way. I had to remember it from last year because I totally forgot. It's huge. Eretz Chita or the Gethenus Ein of Rimon. The land of wheat, barley, grapes, figs, and pomegranates, Shemenu Dvash. The land that's oil and oil, meaning olive oil and honey from dates. It's got all these 7 fruits over here. Chazal say that we have this whole pasuk here. The reason why it goes to these 7 fruits, because each one of them stands for a certain size. For example, the olive we know, kezias, right? The kezias. We name it after kezias. There's other things. There's the size of a grogeris, which is a fig cake. It's a certain type of a fig or whatever, a larger fig. There are other things. Each one of these things stands for a certain shear, a certain size, that within the Torah we needed to know that. We need to know what that size was. And it goes through all these different things that there were, and the Gemara goes through what we need them for. The Chassam Sofer asks, you got a problem. What was the size of these fruits back then when Bnei Yisrael were there? They were huge. What are they now? They're much, much smaller. So how do we know what size they were? I mean, if you're going to name, you're going to say, here's the land, and I'm going to make the land, the fruits are going to be so great, they're going to be the sizes for everything in your land. But they're going to shrink. Why would you make sizes? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that eventually they're going to shrink because the Jews are going to sin, why make sizes based on something that's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller? So the people have answered that the pshat is, okay, but we go by the kizayis of back then. That's why you look at it, the size of matzah that you have to eat on Pesach, you know, like people bring out like 17 pieces of matzah and they bring it all out and they pile it all up together and they're like, all right, here's my kizayis. I bring out an olive. Like, here's the olive, here's the amount of matzah that you have to eat. Like, what in the world? That's not the size of an olive. There's no way that's the size of an olive. So what do you mean the size of an olive? You say, oh, but the olive was bigger back then. The olive was bigger back then. So that's one way of looking at it. Chassam Sofer says awesome. He says, the people back then had bigger appetites. Their kizayis was the size of the zayis, whatever it was back then. The zayis was bigger, their appetites were bigger. Therefore, their kizayis was bigger. As time went on and people got weaker and we weren't able to eat as much, the shiurim, the sizes got smaller. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu knew if he would have left the zayis that big, we'd never be able to eat it. So he minimized the olive so that our food would be a little bit better. He minimized all the shiurim so it would be a little bit easier for us. We wouldn't have to worry about certain things. That was the idea behind what he did over there. Okay.
Why is it double a kazayas?
Double a kazayas, I'm sorry?
Why isn't it the size of our kazayas, of our zayas?
Technically it is. It's only the Chazon Ish that argues. Technically it is. If you eat the size of an olive of matzah, you're yota. Because that is the actual size of the kazayas. It's just, we're machmer. And thank God we're machmer. We have a lot of chumras on Pesach. A lot of chumras on Pesach. And it's much better that way. I'll give you an example, by the way. If you eat like a cookie, and you have to make an alamichya, you have to eat the amount of a kazayas. So what's a kazayas? Check out the book. He gives you like the exact size. It's pretty much the size of a larger olive. Not like a huge olive, pretty much the size of a larger olive. You got to remember there's airspace in between. So you got to like squeeze it. The amount you can squeeze it.
Pesach is different. It's more. It's actually more.
Pesach is much more. Because we're machmer. There's a famous thing. Why do we get saved out of Mitzrayim? Because of chumras. We didn't change our names, we didn't change our language, we didn't change our names, language, and clothing, right? Those three things, names, language, and clothing. So because of chumras, we have extra chumras on Pesach. It's all because of that, like one chumra led to the other. Regardless. Some of them. Nowadays it might be midrabbanan. Yeah, because al matzah maroim yochluvu, you gotta eat the korban pesach with matzah maroim. So there's a question whether matzah is d'oraisa nowadays. It's a gemara in chaf tesem abezim psachim, to Rashi. It says on the first night it may be d'oraisa, but even then, it might be a suffix because we don't necessarily hold a rush. Regardless, all right. The Torah was. We know what happened with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Luchos. Kadosh Baruch Hu brought down the Luchos and he broke them at the foot of the mountain. Took the Luchos and Moshe Rabbeinu broke them at the foot of the mountain. I'm sorry, I said that the wrong way. What happened with the letters on the Luchos? The letters.
Separated themselves,
right? Where do we get that from? So it's a Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Tes Zayin, back in Shmos. Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Tes Zayin says, Charus ala Luchos. The letters were engraved into the Luchos. Al tikre Charus, don't read it as Charus, as engraved, ala Charus. They were free on the Luchos. And that eventually, when Moshe Rabbeinu brought them down and the letters saw that the people were sinning, the letters flew up off the Luchos and flew back up to Shemayim. What was the point of the letters leaving? Why'd they have to leave? Because the Bnei Israel didn't deserve it? So what? Moshe Rabbeinu's going to break the Torah anyway. He's going to break the Luchos anyway. I mean, okay, maybe one thing led to the other, but what? Is there a connection there?
He didn't break them.
What? He didn't break the letters. Oh, so they wanted to leave so they wouldn't get broken.
And it's just stones.
So they wouldn't get broken. It's just stones themselves. It wasn't the holy writing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. It's a very good answer. I'm sorry? They made them lighter, right, and then they became so heavy. I'm saying one might lead to the other. But listen to this board. This is all from the Baal Shem Tov, and then I guess we added on, there's a Chassam Sofer, there's Rav Wolfson over here, it says like this. Had Moshe not broken those Luchos, had the letters not gone up and nothing happened, if they had not done the Eagle, what would have been? Chassam Sofer says, a Chiddush, he says, they never would have forgotten the Torah. Staring at these letters, which were the letters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that God brought down to this earth, would be so, it would be engraved onto you, it would be Charus, it would be onto your heart. You wouldn't be able to forget them. They'd be there forever. There would be nothing you can do in order to get rid of those letters. And anything you would try to do, you wouldn't be able to forget them. The problem was, once they did the Egel Azov, once they did that Egel, they didn't deserve to have that memory anymore. Because now they're going to try to find the easy way out. They're going to try to find the easy way out, meaning they'll learn for a little bit. And then when they memorize everything, they'll be like, all right, we're done. What do we have to do anymore? Well, you should chazer. You should go over it again. Why should I chazer? I just did it. I know the whole thing by heart. I know everything by heart. When Moshe Rabbeinu saw that the Jews were looking for excuses, the Egel was a big excuse. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down. So immediately you make an Egel? Wait a day! They were looking for an excuse. They wanted to make an ego. So they found, they said, oh, but there's a drasha. And they said, on the Kisei HaKavod, there's a shore. And if we go to that shore, it's meet us at dinner in all the desert. And they figured out these huge excuses to be able to do it. Once Moshe Rabbeinu saw that they were into excuses, that they were into just finding a reason to go ahead and do something or whatever it is, then he realized that the Charus HaLuchos was a bad thing for them. Their inability to forget anything, the fact that they would remember everything forever, would just give them an excuse to start learning other things. Okay, we're done with the Torah, then why don't we learn something else? But we know that Chazar is the best thing in the world, because every time you Chazar something, you end up being Machadish something new. You end up thinking something new. Every word that I have from last year that I might repeat over or say over, there's always something new that I said about it. It's not the exact same thing that I said last year, maybe it's less, but it's not going to be the exact same thing. There's always going to be something new that I said about it. The point is that when you see something again and again and again and again, it's not like it gets boring. You see it again, you're like, oh, now I get this. Then you see it again, you're like, oh, now I get that. That's the point. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew that if they wouldn't be able to forget, bad things would happen. So he broke the luchos. The letters went up to Shemayim. He purposely made them forget Torah. That from now on, whenever somebody wanted to remember Torah, it would take a long time and you'd have to chazer over and over and over again, because otherwise you were just going to forget it. He did that on purpose because he thought this is the best thing for the Jews to have. The absolute best thing for Jews to have. That's why, such an interesting board, Rav Wolfson says, that's the end of the Torah. The very last words in the Torah are the words Le'enei Kol Yisrael. Le'enei Kol Yisrael. Those words in the eyes of all of the Jews, Rashi says, Shenasu Libo Lishbor Aluchos. Le'eneihem. He decided to break the Luchos in front of them. The end of the Torah refers to the breaking of the Luchos. What in the world? Why in the world would we refer to a bad thing, a horrible thing, at the end of the Torah when you're supposed to end up with something good? And by the way, I broke the luchos. And by the way, I destroyed the ability for you guys to remember Torah forever. Then now you're gonna have to actually go over it again and again and again in order to remember it. Why end up that way? Now it's great. Now it's great because that was a good thing. It was the best thing that Moshe Rabbeinu could have done for us. Because when you finish the Torah, who says you're going to start all over again? You did it once. You finished it off. You're done. I just memorized the entire Torah. If you want to start over again, you have to have the ability to forget. So the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos causes us to say, Le'enei Kol Yisrael. Gee, I wonder what happened in the beginning again. And you start off in the beginning, you say, Bereishis Bara Elokim Shemayim Vaaretz. And you start all over again. So the fact that it was done in front of all Yisrael, the fact that he broke the luchos, is the best thing he could have possibly done. That's why this is beautiful. Asher Shibarta, that Moshe Rabbeinu broke, are the letters of Bereishis. Aleph, Shin, Reish. Shin and Reish are repeated. And then Beis, Yud, and Tav. Asher, Shibarta. Asher, Shibarta are the letters of Bereishis. The letters of those six letters of Bereishis are the words inside them. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos, that caused us to be able to start from Bereishis all over again. You can do Bereishis over and over and over and over again, because we actually forget Torah. We forget the things that we have, and we have to go over it again and again and again. Okay, we're going to do one last word. I like this word a lot. I think everybody will like it here. Parak Yud Pasuk Ches. It's going to be a quick one. Parak Yud Pasuk Ches. The pasuk says the following. It says, "Ba'isahi hivto Hashem Shevet Levi l'seisas Aron Bris Hashem." At that time, God separated Shevet Levi to carry the Aron of Hashem. Lama lufnei Hashem l'shor, so to serve in front of God. Ulevorach bishmo ad yom hazeh, to bless God in His name up until that day. So listen how this goes. This is an absolutely unbelievable word. It says vowel. The Baal Shem Tov used to make kamios. He used to make amulets. Right? Now the problem is that Shabsai Tzvi, 100 years before the Baal Shem Tov, was a guy who started writing amulets. And he put inside the amulets little Kabbalistic things, like little things in Kabbalah. And eventually people started falling for him. They thought Shabsai Tzvi was Mashiach. And as soon as Shabsai Tzvi converted to Islam, when he converted to the Islamic faith, then all of a sudden everybody made a gezerah. No more kamios. No more amulets. No more Kabbalah. Nobody could do Kabbalah from then on. The Ramchal got in trouble for it. Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzado, the Tiferes Yehonas, and Rabbi Yonatan Eibschitz got in trouble for it. Baal Shem Tov got into big trouble for it. When they heard he was making kamios, people started putting him in cheirim. People started yelling at him. The Gro got really upset. How could he make amulets? How could he make such a thing? We said, we have a gezerah, you're not allowed to make amulets. So one guy got up, a man by the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Midarvish. I don't know who this is. Rabbi Yitzchak Midarvish made a takana that none of the amulets of the Baal Shem Tov would work. The Baal Shem Tov knew the Rabbi Yitzchak and made this takana, and he realized that it was Rabbi Yitzchak that was making his amulets not work. So he went to Rabbi Yitzchak and he said to him, why do you do this to me? So Rabbi Yitzchak said to him, listen, we have a takana, we made a gezerah, you're not allowed to make any amulets. Said the Baal Shem Tov, you said that we can't make any amulets with Kabbalah inside them. I don't put Kabbalah inside my amulets. She said, so what do you put inside? Baal Shem Tov said, I put my name in there. He put inside there Yisrael Basara, I believe his name was. Yisrael Basara. That's what he put inside the amulets. So they opened up one of his amulets and they saw it. It said Yisrael Basara. Yisrael Ben Sara. I'm sorry. Yisrael Ben Sara. That's what it said inside there. So he said, why do you do that? How do you know that's going to work? How do you know that your amulet, with Kabbalah, okay, I can understand, but an amulet with your name in it? How do you know that's going to work? He said, look at the pasuk. At that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated Shevet Levi because they were so holy. Ulav Lashor, so to serve God, Ulav Varech Bishmo, and to give brachos in his name. In their name, the Baal Shem Tov used it, and homiletically you can say, to use the name of a tzaddik gives you a bracha. Write down the name of a tzaddik, and that is a bracha. Levarich bishmo. Even though it literally means bless in God's name, the translation of the Baal Shem Tov was saying was, you can bless with the name of the Levi. Saying the name of the Levi or the Kohen, if the guy's a tzaddik, can bring up everybody and everything. So the Baal Shem Tov put his own name inside there, and that was what was healing people. So Rabbi Darbich took away his takana, and he allowed him to go ahead and use it, and everything was all good, and it was ended up being used. No, he wasn't, I don't know if he was, like, I don't know, regardless, not the point. Regardless, the idea behind it was to go ahead and use those amulets and be able to say that was for the bracha and the refuah, everything all worked, and that's the pshat behind it. That's why, and I'm going to end off with this, that's why you can't call your Rebbe by his first name. Because the name of a tzaddik has a lot of kochos of kedusha, a lot of kedusha inside there, and if you call him by his first name, bad things may happen. Terrible things may happen because you're using it in the wrong thing. Yeah, you could cause it if you use it in the right way. You're saying his name for holy things. But if you go up to him and you're like, hey, Josh, what's going on? You call your Rebbe by his first name, whatever it is, then you got a problem. You got a problem because what you're doing is you're taking his name and you're sort of like, you're bashing it. You're bashing it. You're saying like, I'm calling him Josh instead of Rabbi, I don't know, Kalman, whatever his name is, you know? Like, that's going to be the idea behind it. So regardless, that's the pshat behind it. We're going to stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.